The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 3 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 30th of June, 2023. Hopefully you are very well indeed and you're with us here for the next 3 hours. Loads to keep you informed, entertained, of course, and we're going to kick off with our Friday panel. And before we do introduce them, I want to remind you how you get involved. We want your views and your comments to 086 60 25000, from outside the Republic 00353 86 60 25000, or give us a call to 074 91 25000, and emails to comments at highlandradio.com. If you want to watch today's show, you can get on to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, where you can watch on your phone, your tablet, your smart TV, your Fire Stick, whichever way you prefer. We're across Facebook as well, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and you can also click Watch Live on our website. So there you have it. No excuses, everybody. All right, let's say good morning to our guests this morning. We'll say hi first to Mary Hart, broadcaster and journalist. Mary, good morning to you. Great to have you back on the programme.
Thank you, Greg. Good morning.
Lovely to have you, as I mentioned. We also have Councillor Micheál Colum-McGill-Nasbeg, independent councillor in the Glenteith Municipal District. Good morning to you, Micheál. Great to have you on board. And last but not least, Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear Letterkenny. Hi, Leonard. Great to see you again.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, panel.
Right, OK. It's still the top story. And yesterday was another rough day for RTE's top execs, who appeared before the Oireachtas Public Accounts Committee the day after they went before the Media Committee. A week after it emerged, RTE did not disclose that it paid presenter Ryan Tuberty around €345,000 above his salary over 6 years. It's clear the crisis is not going to go away for the broadcaster any time soon. Quite a lot developed yesterday and the day before. The Irish taxpayer, we heard, may have been defrauded over undeclared payments made by RTE to its highest earner, Ryan Tuberty. A committee has been told. They're not really quite sure yet either if there was any tax avoidance involved in how these payments were made. Chief Financial Officer Richard Collins also said he believed there was concealment and deception in two €75,000 payments to Tuberty, which bumped his total annual fee up to €515,000. And then, of course, there's the barter account. €270,000 out of that spent whining and dining RTE clients at rugby games, soccer games, U2 concerts and all that. Okay, so Mary Hart, what have we learned? What have you taken from the last couple of days? Where does RTE go from here?
I wish I could tell you that, because I have learned very little and I don't know where they're going to go from here. I've worked in public service broadcasting myself for 25 years, and I do know the checks and balances, the word being compliance, that BBC put all of us under. I am shocked that RTE have been at this, have managed to still continue to do what they were being checked for having done years ago. You know, the reason why we're getting the salaries of the top presenters is because nobody knew what they were getting, and then they were obliged by the Oireachtas committees to do that. What we have got to bear in mind first and foremost here is that this is taxpayers' money. This is a license fee that all of us are obliged to pay. If we don't pay it, we can end up in jail, which has happened. Now, on top of that, there is a coterie of people like myself who would be journalists. Emma O'Kelly, I worked with her in BBC and Derry. She's the NUJ union representative who's, I suppose, challenging RTE now head on, and no better person to do that. She's a very competent lady. Those are the people that are the nuts and bolts of RTE. They're the backroom people, and of course Emma and of the front line journalists. They are absolutely anger is not a word I would use. They're disappointed, they're frustrated, and not surprising, they have now got to take on top of all of that, the public, who, when they go to interview someone, will turn around and say, "I assure you, people have been bluffing all along." They're taking it face on. Now, I know Ryan Tuberty is the person at the core of this, but I would think that Ryan Tuberty is not the only person with whom these sweetheart deals have been done down the years. I think there's an awful lot more to come out. I certainly, the executive board, like who appoints them? You know, I don't know, are they government appointees? Like who decides who goes on the board of RTE? Who makes that choice? Because by the looks of it, they were doing nothing. They were just allowing RTE to carry on doing the executive board is supposed to, be, to make sure that everything is done above board. And certainly Richard Collins yesterday when he was asked, and he is now someone, that I assume if he's RTE's financial controller, he is in a staff job, but I could be wrong there. They're a two-tier, however they manage to be like that, they are a two-tier organisation. They're public service and they're also get advertising. But his when he was asked for salary, he wasn't going to say, he was not going to tell what his salary was.
Well, can I add to that, if you don't mind, Mary? He's the chief financial officer with RTE. He wasn't able to say absolutely what his salary was. He doesn't know what his salary is. He says it was in and around €200,000 plus a car, but he'd have to double check that. So, yes, he was reluctant to say it, but when he did say it, he didn't have an exact figure. He was not, the chief financial officer was not sure of his own actual salary.
Yeah, well, I think that's disgraceful. Surely, I would imagine, Greg, you know exactly how much you're getting every year in your annual salary. And I would think that he should, as the financial controller, at the top of his head, immediately able to say how much, as well as the fact that he should have been prepared to be asked that question in the first place in the Dáil, you know, or at the finance committee. So, you know, there's an awful lot of covering up, and there's an awful, it just, to me, it just smacks of... you know, sort of almost rightmanship, you know, that this is RT, we're above board, we're the public service broadcaster, you are the politicians, we ask you the questions, you don't ask us the questions. And, you know, for anyone, I feel sorry for anyone working on RT at the moment. I'm angry as much as anybody else on the street. I watched the RT news last night and every single person who was spoken to on the street in a vox pop where I rate. So this is something that goes right into everybody's home, because people do actually, you know, watch the RTE news, they listen to various programs on RTE. So being the national broadcaster, it's where they turn to get the news at certain times. I'm not saying they don't listen to Highland Radio, but you know, it is there. It's the national broadcaster. The other awful thing about it is what Shuan Nirahali said. Aside from the act of designed to deceive, that was how she put it, which is a terrible indictment on Dee Forbes and whoever was alongside her to make this decision. But also, you know, there's the attitude of this is money that we can do whatever we want with. We can pay people whatever we like. You know, having a bus to U2 concerts and tickets to the World Cup rugby. Did anybody ever say, you know, where's the compliance here?
No one ever did. You know? And I want to come back to you and we'll tease out the future going forward. Micheál Colum, what has your reaction been to this last while? And people might say, well, why are you talking about that when there's other issues like homelessness and health and what have you? But the bottom line is this is another arm of the state. You know, I think really what we've got an opportunity to see with seeing how this executive operates is really maybe what the mindset is at the head of the civil service in housing or in education or in health. And again, it's the rank and file people like the nurses and the teachers, you know, that end up getting the grief. But it's these types of people at the top table that make the decisions and seem really quite insulated from reality. So I think this is an important story in the wider context of, you know, of what goes on in this country. What do you think, Micheál Colum?
Well, I think probably what similar to what the public thinks. Nobody's shocked at this. There's an expectance out there amongst the public, which is that the economic and the media and the political elite are up to the eyes in scandals like this here, and it's just a case that it hasn't broke, and this one has. People would very much believe that the likes of Ryan Tuberty is well looked after in RTE, as some others in RTE are well looked after in the quiet to peddle their economic and their political agendas. So I don't think anybody's surprised what angers me mostly more about it is that when things like these happen, that we're not far more angry, not frustrated or mad, but angry. We have RTÉ here based in our own county here in Radio in the Delta in Gidor, who do fantastic work. And I know that additional money that has been wasted on the likes of Tubertys and the U2 concerts and where else they're going, that would be a game changer in terms of more services being able to be provided to the Gaeltacht community. And the vast majority of people in RTÉ are hard-working journalists and staff, need that be cleaners or people on the front desks or whatever part they play. And I certainly know the people that I know that work in RTÉ aren't on much money. And the idea that everybody will be branded now, that's unfortunate. What Mary touched on earlier on, when they go out to do their journalism. But this money could have been easily used to do proper journalism, to investigate what we're here to talk about today, which I think it's an absolute scandal. The Minister of Justice and the court orders she got the last week or so. And but yet, when you're paying under table money, what it looks like, to make sure that the ideology of a government, which is right wing, is being peddled on our national broadcasting, so that we can make sure that we're keeping the public in check. It's nobody surprised in this, and people do expect that this goes on all the time, and that it's only every now and again that somebody trips and it comes to light.
Yeah, but I mean, it is the government parties that are some of the most vocal on this. They are questioning RTÉ about this. It's not like they're backing them up here.
Yeah, but they will, yeah, because it's also for a lot of the government politicians to talk about the likes of this here, and rightly so, that Brian Tubertys should be put up high and should be questioned as his directors and those that manage it. But it also does is gives a good screen on other very important issues that you touched on earlier. Right now, the Free State government and the political and economic classes are absolutely tripping over themselves to try to force the 26 counties to join NATO. We have thousands of people who are homeless right across the state, also within the six counties. So it gives another screen, the ongoing use of Shannon Airport by American military while they fight their wars across the world. All these things here are a great opportunity to screen the important real issues. The fact that here in Donegal that we have so many people who are without homes, so many families who only get to see their grandchildren through Skype a couple of times a week. So issues like these are ideal and are nearly quietly welcomed by a lot of senior politicians, because it takes away from other issues that they don't want the public to be poking at them.
With respect, I do think you're doing the public a disservice. I think they're across all of those stories and are very vocal in relation to that, and that might come to pass maybe at the next election, who is to say, but I'd have great faith in the public, particularly here in Donegal, to not allow themselves be distracted by a controversy like this.
It does happen, and you know, Greg, it does happen when there's big issues. When there's big issues coming up, that other issues are pushed to the fore by the media elite in Dublin.
But is this not what you're doing yourself, Micheál? You're just deflecting here now from a very serious story that has affected every single household in this country, because every single household in this country pays a licence fee to RTÉ.
Not every household.
But you know what she means, though.
Well, I doubt there's very few households.
The licence. So, and there's quite a lot of houses who can't and won't be paying it. But no, I'm not deflecting here, because I have a real genuine issue or a real genuine concern for the working class communities they represent, and also right across the 26 counties.
Yeah, but I think this story goes to the root of why we aren't addressing maybe a lot of the problems that you talk about.
The untouchable establishment, and that's exactly what it is. And you'll find very shortly that nobody pays any price for this apart from us, the working class.
Leonard Watson, what's your views?
George, Greg, probably what Colm and Mary touched on, I actually think it's awful for the staff. The staff from the top to bottom in RTÉ, you know, they're all being tied with the one brush. you know, there's no accountability at all. You know, that actually reminds me back of the boom times where money was just thrown around willy-nilly, like, and, you know, as Mary said, rugby matches, 10-year tickets for IRFU and Champions League things. You know, it's just all very murky. You know, a barter account that nobody seemed to know anything about. You know, you have a board of directors there that didn't even know there's a barter account. I heard a woman on last night, she says she always knew that this barter account was for, like, it's like a petty cash. I know hundreds of thousands isn't petty cash, but she was, like, for buying water, it was buying. And when she heard that there was actually hundreds of thousands being spent through this account or being funneled through this account. But, you know, even, you know, I know people are saying, oh, Ryan Tuberty, I think he's as culpable in this as everybody else. You know, when they all had to take pay cuts in 2019, Ryan Tuberty and his agent were working on a deal for him actually get a pay rise. Like, you know, and I'm working in an organisation, you're in, Greg. If you found out somebody in your organisation had done a dirty deal on the side, well, you're all taking pay cuts and they're actually getting a pay rise. I think it's disgusting. The power that Noel Kelly seemed to have within the RTE, they all say that he just seemed to call the shots. He had 18 or 19 other representatives in RTE. He wasn't doing dirty deals for them, or was he doing dirty deals for them? So it's just, I think it's very sad because we do need a functioning state broadcaster.
To serve what purpose? Because I keep hearing that. I don't disagree, but...
I would tell anybody, go on and watch GB News some night and watch that drivel that is pumped through that station, you know, and it's an agenda on its own. I know Michael Collins says that there's an agenda here, but actually, I still think...
Yeah, but go and watch it. Go and listen or watch to the Times TV channel or LBC that hold government to account, they do provide a public service, but they're independently funded. I mean, are you saying the antidote to GB News is BBC News?
Well, do you watch, it's a fair. It's like, I know what you're saying. People say, "Oh, there's agendas going on here and there."
Like, say for instance, just in terms of state broadcasting, and not want to get into it, right? But let's just say in terms of what's going on in Ukraine, right? Which we all think is horrendous. I'm not for any way questioning that. But have you ever witnessed any nuanced coverage of that on BBC or RTE, sort of maybe a counterpoint or maybe talking about options for peace or maybe even talking about where the Ukrainian bombs are landing, for an example. Now, as I say, I'm not getting into anything here or suggesting anything. I'm just, have you heard any sort of nuanced coverage of the biggest story in the world at the moment on BBC or RTE, or do you just hear that, you know, everything bad that the Russians are doing and just that the Ukrainians are in this struggle, which is pretty much what it is. But would you not expect from a public service broadcaster to give you a more maybe rounded view of what's actually going on? That's what public service broadcasting would be to me. And this is what everyone says we need to retain, but we don't. We really, what we get is we get the West narrative through BBC and RTE with no challenge at all whatsoever. So we just have to accept that this is what we have to do and this is the direction we're going and this is how much we have to spend. There's no talk about conscription in Ukraine. There's no talk about other things that might be going on there. Again, I'll just put it to you. Do you think we're being served by the public broadcaster on just an issue like that, for an example?
Well, Greg, John, I would have to say, no, maybe it's not BBC RT. I have heard other narratives, maybe things that the Ukrainian soldiers have been doing out there. So I have heard these on the news now, not as much as you say, you know, is it very balanced? Not very balanced at all, but is it a balanced war? Like when there's bombs landing on
I'm not suggesting for a second. I was just trying to give a very current example. I don't want to get in ins and outs of, we know Russia's the aggressor in this. Don't get me wrong. I don't get that, but there's other areas, there's other parts to the story that we don't hear. That's all I'm saying. And it's not in any way to say there's a cover-up or anything. It's just, I would expect more balance, not balance, sorry, just more nuanced coverage of big stories like that.
I've worked with public service broadcasting, Greg, for 25 years, and I have been at the very core face of it, which is the journalists, and beaten into anybody working within public service broadcasting is that you get a balanced story, that you get two sides of the story, that you report it accurately, you're checked and balanced by your editor, you're checked and balanced by the producer of the programme, That does not happen all the time in a commercial station because they don't have to do that because they're not public service funded. And that's the issue here. If you're a commercial station like Fox News, you can do whatever the hell you want because there's nobody watching you other than the fact that your shareholders hold you to account. And the shareholders holding RT to account are the public. So that is why we need public service broadcasting. And I would fight to the death to make sure the public service broadcasting is kept there because you will get the fairness that you expect to get and not the commercial answers that you get because somebody is paying your wages who wants a higher a dividend at the end of the year in their share. And therefore, they go after the most popular audience, which is not always, the masses are not always right. So, you know, you've got to get those programs that give you, that you'll never get on commercial stations because you don't get any money back on them. RTE, unfortunately, however it has happened, has a model that has both commercial and public service. And I think that model is going to have to be drastically looked at and pulled down and put in place, and that, you know, they're not, as Shuni Rahali said yesterday, they're not bidding against themselves. You know, Ryan Tuberty didn't come from Hollywood to present a programme on RTE. He was a runner for Pat Kenny. He developed his career through RTE, and how in the name of goodness RTE end up then paying him a complete fortune to do the job that they trained him to do in the first place.
All right, Micheál Colum, you wanted to come in there, sorry.
Not often, myself and Mary possibly would agree on things, but I would certainly agree with Mary on that there, that a state broadcaster is very much needed. What we need to do is that the public has far more input in it in terms of what actually the narrative has been pushed. And let's be honest here, RTE have been pushing, you know, because we're using the Ukraine war as an example here, RTE has been very much pushing the narrative of the West and not actually putting out that there is other narratives out there in terms of NATO's expansion, the objective actually of the West and the power block shifts throughout the world in terms of East and West. So as much as I absolutely would 100% defend a state broadcasting network, but there has to be a way that we as the public are able to challenge it and that it's not left to the political classes dependent on those who are in government. Because if you have a situation where you have a right-wing government, which we clearly have, that narrative then is pursued within the state broadcaster, which RTE is, and that's what they pursue. Where if you look back maybe at the 80s, and in terms of when the Stickies had a very strong hand within government with X amount of ministers and quite a lot of sticks within RTE, that narrative was pushed. So you need a balance. And I see far more left wing and far more balance instead of this conservative and then conservative right.
Well, can I put it to you that, so say, for instance, we have this situation where we have RTE that interviews the politicians, okay? It's the politicians that decide how much RTE get. If RTE do wrong, it's the politicians that question RTE. Right. I mean, where is the public role in this? I mean, should, you know, Mary, would it be useful if it were the public asking the questions yesterday, if it were the public saying, you know, we'll give us the top 100? Do you know what I mean? It's just like the politicians, they all play five-a-side together. They go to the same table quizzes in Dublin. They go to the same concerts. They're friends. You know what I mean? So how is the public really represented in this public service broadcasting model then, for all the reasons I've just outlined?
Well, you're going to have to accept, whether you like it or not, Greg, that all the politicians are elected by the people, and that's why they're elected by the people. We can't all sit in the doll at a whim and say, oh, I want to speak today. So our politicians are elected to speak for us. We have to trust them. We voted for them. We have to accept, and we are very fortunate in this country that we have proportional representation, so we don't have sort of the first person past the post to get elected. So we have a fair representation across the board. We have all the parties in Donegal represented in Dáil Éireann from each of our interests, if we have any interest whatsoever. But that politicians, we're back to the politicians being held to account by RT, but now the roles have been reversed, and now you know, RTE are being held account by the politicians. And I do think they're doing a good job. I do think they're challenging. I watched last night, you know, some of the broadcasts of the committee yesterday. And nobody is holding back on what they're saying. I mean, they're bouncing those executives off the wall. They're not getting the answers, but they will delve down on behalf of the public to find out what was going on in RT to allow pay to people that nobody knew about. And it's not just, you know, a few pounds here and there. I do recall back when I joined BBC in 1984, there was a scandal within the organisation at that time in Belfast, and it had to do with someone who had misrepresented their travel expenses, and they were let go. Now, I mean, those are the kinds of things that should have been happening in RTE, that you're, you know, when you put in your docket for your travel from A to B, that it's correct. It looks to me like nobody was checking anything. Nobody was, you know, as was said at the committee. What were you people, those four people a couple of days ago that were in front of the Oireachtas committee, what were you on the board doing if Dee Forbes was doing one thing and you didn't know what she was doing? Well, what were you doing? You know, what is
I think one of the issues here, Mary, is that it reflects, the economic and the media elite and the political elite that has been subdermic right through for generations, that they are the people that are so arrogant that they can do as they choose. And that's what they've been doing. And they've just been caught out in this one. There will be many, many more. There will be many people within RTE that are hoping every day that they are not the ones that are going to be hung out. There are plenty of politicians out there who pray to maybe their gods every day that they're not going to get caught. The same way with the business classes, that they're not getting caught in terms of dodgy deals and tax, and then dodgy deals with maybe governments and state bodies. So the problem is it comes from right down to a class perspective, if you ask me. And I know we don't have all day to discuss this. But the unfortunate of it is that those that we do elect don't always speak and the best interest of those that actually elect them, and those that vote don't always vote in the best interest of themselves and their community. So our systems is upside down, if you ask me, and there's absolutely nobody shocked out there in the public, and no more than any of the rest. Leonard and the shop on the main street, who talks to so many people in the public, me and my Mark, I'm sure yourself, Mary, Greg Hughes every day in Highland Radio. Be honest, nobody's shocked here. The only thing is that it's just somebody else that's caught, and come next week, it'll be somebody else.
Okay, stay where you are.
An absolute change in the system.
We'll come to that. We'll come to that, because what we're going to do is we've other issues to get through. We'll come back after the break, and we're going to find out from our guests. We'll start with Leonard as to, you know, what happens next for that organisation. Because you are funding it out there, so I think that's an important question. How does it rehabilitate? What does it itself? And how does it look into the future? We'll give that 5 or 6 minutes after the break and then move on to other issues. Stay right where you are, back in 3 minutes. We're in the company of Mary Hart, Councillor Micheál Colum Ag Éileann Easpaig, and Leonard Watson. Leonard, I'll come to you just for a few moments as we see what happens next. Can you see a pathway for Ryan Tuberty to get back on air, for an example? Because I think this ongoing investigation into the balloon payments or these end of contract payments might show that they were introduced to artificially represent a pay cut. I think it might be difficult to get sponsors on board with him, and I think it might be really difficult for him to reconcile with the staff who thought that he was taking a pay cut similar to they were asked to pay for. Can you see a pathway back onto RTE for him?
John, I was listening to another program yesterday. Greg was in the car, and there's a PR person on, and she says she feels actually he's going to have to walk away, go away for a year or two and come back. I actually don't see there is a way back. I agree with you, Greg. I would think sponsors would feel, you know, a kind of thorn in their throat over sponsoring a show that he's involved in now. Like, and it's all down to accountability. Like I said, Greg, you know, if I'm working in an organisation and we're all in it together and we're all taking pay cuts, and then you find out that the guy at the top of the tree didn't take a pay cut and actually got a pay raise, and had put on his account that there was no way that his pay was going to be cut in the next 5 years. It's galling, really. Like, you know, it's what, you know, and there was a quote there from Ryan Tuberty about 3 or 4 years ago: we all need to do what we have to do. Well, he did what he had to do, and that was look after himself. So, like, you're asked a question about RT now. I think it goes back to accountability. This is a business that's owned by the people.
What's needed?
Well, do you know what, Greg? Mary said it, you know. And other organisations, if something like this happened, people would lose their jobs. Like, like the chief financial officer was sitting there in the last couple of days. You know, this guy is highly paid. Well, he's totally incompetent. The auditors have questions to answer. Why was the auditors not flashing this up 4 or 5 years ago that there's money in a barter account? The board, who was asking questions on the board? I heard Moya Doherty on last night. She says, you know, about they didn't know about the barter account, but the question was asked, well, were you asking questions about the financial? And she said, we weren't really. We're kind of, you know, we were kind of accepting what was told us. And for them to say now that Dee Forbes had this amount of power and RTE that she could just write checks willy-nilly, I don't believe that either. Like, you know, in a bigger organization like that, there has to be accountability. Mm. There has to be checks and balances. And we're not chatting about 1,000 or 2,000. We're chatting about hundreds of thousands of euros that was spent. And nobody knew about this money. Like,
people will suspect the board contrived to make Dee Forbes unavailable to be compelled to appear before the Oireachtas Committee. That information was also withheld from the minister with responsibility. Yeah. You're talking about accountability. Well, there are major scandals emerging before our very eyes at these committees, and yet there is still no accountability. It's just like, well, I forgot, or I should have, or I didn't. So we're still seeing people being exposed for quite serious things, and yet they're back. They're going to be back. The same people are going to be back before the committee next Thursday. So there's no accountability before our very eyes.
But as you point out, Greg, like the minister was hung out to dry, and the minister's actually, you could say, persona RTE's boss. You know, they're answerable to her. And for them to sit in a meeting last Saturday and go through all the financial stuff, and not to bring up the fact that they had suspended Dee Ford, and that, you know. But again,
well, they asked for it. No, that's, they did tell her they'd suspended her. They didn't. They didn't tell her that they had sought her resignation, which is right. Okay, Micheál Colum, how does RTE recover from this going forward?
Look, I'm not sure how RTE is going to recover from this here. I think that they'll push on. I think that Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, will cover them as much as they can. Bear in mind, you know, and just a point that I meant to make earlier on is that, you know, we need to look at the political connections. You know, Brian Tuberty isn't just somebody who just worked up from, you know, serving tea to producers to being one of the top broadcasters in RTE. Like, you know, his political connections are out there in the open. They're massive, you know, and again, going back
But we're a population of 5 million. Are we all not going to have political connections at one point or other?
I don't too, Greg. But there shouldn't be. The only thing I'll say, I know your son, he came from, as you said, a tea boy, but that should be actually celebrated in some organisations too, that a guy can actually come from the very bottom to the top. And you know, at the end of the day, you can say to one, but Ryan Tuberty, he actually is a very good broadcaster. So
I wouldn't share that view, to be honest with you. But I don't think, I don't rate the man at all. But we have to look at...
He speaks so highly of you too.
You just don't tap into a big job like Ryan Tuberty's without the political background and family that he has. And let's be honest about it. How does RTE recover from this year? I'm not very sure.
Well, can I just ask you, because let's not forget to, Micheál, before you finish your point, they are going to take a hit in advertising revenue. They are going to take a hit in licence fee. Well, Centre Parks have already pulled out of any future sponsorship of programmes Ryan Tuberty's involved in. This is like 180 grand. It's not insignificant. And also, people are going to, in reasonably sized numbers, not pay their licence fee. They're already 90.
Yes, huge,
they're
huge
also 90 to 100 million euro in debt. So this doesn't blow over next week. The problems from this crisis are going to be going in for years ahead. So just, like, do you see a pathway for them? Like, is it a restructuring? Is it removing the commercial element? Is it state-funded only? How do you think it might work?
Yeah, look, I think it's very interesting what Mary was saying earlier on, that it's worth looking at how did RTE trip in to getting private funding. And then when you do get private funding, you're in a bit of a slippy slope there, you know, unless the narrative or the agenda of the capitalist classes aren't looked after, you know, do they continue to fund it? So I think that if you look at the likes of maybe Radio na Gaeilte, which all they do is continue to broadcast without any sponsorships, is certainly a way to go forward for RTE. But look, will the board do the honourable thing, resign? Will the politicians who knew about this, if they knew about this, will they resign? Absolutely not. Okay. Will things change? Probably not. Will there be small bit of jigging and wigging to kind of make it look like there's been massive change? Probably will be. Right. But overall, will it change? in terms of the interest of who they're there to serve. I just don't have that optimism right now, to be very honest.
It is going to be interesting times
it's not that I want to be absolutely and utterly critical of RTE, because there's some fantastic people in RTE, and there's been some fantastic programmes done through RTE through the years. But I do think that there has to be a revamp. There has to be a look at Reading the Gaeltachta, the TG Cathaid, you know, the Dublin 4 connection, the political elite connection. There has to be a whole revamp. You know, calling short for getting on the streets and calling the revolution today, I'm not sure what's going to happen after that.
Yeah, of course. And the model has changed too. It used to be, I think, 90-10 public versus commercial funding. Now it's 50-50 or thereabouts. There's the big wages that people are going to be asked to not accept anymore. I think they're going to try and bring people in on the books. There's a massive, we haven't got a figure yet, but a multi-million euro tax liability for these bogus self-employed contracts that's yet to come out. There is so much to come on this. Mary Hart, you know, you've worked, as you've quite rightly pointed out, in organisations similar to RTE. How does the incoming Director General chart a course through this, out of this storm and into calmer seas? It's very hard to see that pathway for me anyway.
Yeah, it is. And I wouldn't like to have that, to take on that job, because certainly when he applied for that job, he didn't envisage this was what he was going to come right smack into. There are a couple of things that you have to bear in mind here. Like the RTE or the media, everybody, it is like known as the fourth estate. So they're there to keep the public aware of what's going on. So, you know, there's that issue. So RTE should be independent of the government. Catherine, maybe the minister may be in charge of, Catherine Martin may be in charge of RTE's, you know, checks and balances, but she's not their boss. So what has to happen, and you asked about Ryan Tuberty, I cannot see how RTE can bring Ryan Tuberty back on air. I really can't see that. The issue there is, and I think it's kind of was flagged up somewhat, and that his contract was up now for renewal. So that means they won't be, they're not obliged to have him back, because he can't really challenge them because he has no contract. And that may have been something that was, you know, maybe somewhere down the line we don't know about, but that may have been something that was being manoeuvred anyway. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know, but it's unfortunate for him, because that's, you know, perhaps his agent, Noel Kelly, who I bizarrely was getting a fee, bizarrely is the least of what I can say, for giving advice to RTE. Now, why somebody, an organisation like RTE, needed advice from somebody outside, such as an agent for the presenters, is beyond me, totally beyond me. So I think the independence of RTE from government influence and must be the primary concern of anybody putting a shape back on RTE. Sadly, I think there is going to be an awful lot of people going to lose their jobs in RTE, because they are on contracts, on jobs, and they're going to have to be made redundant. And I know someone within the media that I know suggested that it could be as many as 500 to job cuts in RTE to get themselves back on track, because it is top heavy. It has always been, you know, in my sort of knowledge, I never worked for RTE other than as a freelancer, that there were a lot of people, you know, employed in RTE that didn't do an awful lot. So they will be first and foremost. But unfortunately, too, those young people that just came in will be first in or last in, first out, and that's sad too. So it's a mess. There is no other, you can't sugarcoat it in any way. It's a mess of their own making. They've been crying poor mouth to the government, saying we've no money, and yet suddenly this all transpires that actually somebody did have money, and there's a whole heap of it sitting there somewhere for them to do whatever they wanted to do. And if I was a journalist in the newsroom and RTE and heard this, I would be looking for a job elsewhere, because I just think, you know, that they were let down so badly by those that should have been looking after them.
Yeah, and then in just a yes and no, finally, though, we have seen the worst of RTE. Have we seen some of the best of RTE in terms of the journalists that you talk of, the news teams, in covering this most difficult story that really focuses
absolutely,
on the workplace?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've watched Mary McCallaghan last night. You know, she was interrogating a panel about her own story, you know. So, and I do think they have been out there. They've been very fair. They've been very balanced. They've not held back. And I do think, you know, it's been a tough job for all of those at the front line asking the questions and telling the story. And I do think they should be commended. And there's the proof. You know, those are the people that are the nuts and bolts of the organisation, not the talent, as they became known as in BBC. You know, the talent got the money and the hardcore employees, you know, did the work.
OK, we'll be back with more after these. Right. Phone and internet companies have been ordered to retain user data as part of measures to protect, we're told, the security of the state. Justice Minister Helen McEntee has obtained a High Court order requiring telecommunications service providers to retain certain information. These are your Vodafones, your Threes and what have you. The information they're going to retain includes user traffic and location data for a period of 12 months. So we heard yesterday from Digital Rights Ireland that that's likely to be a rolling application. The court application, which was held behind closed doors, was made this week by the minister under the Communications Retention of Data Act 2011. We don't know the judge. We don't know what was submitted. We don't know what the risk to the state of the security is. We just know that the government will be able to hold pretty much all of your data that the telephone communication companies would collect routinely. Micheál Colm, I think this is one that you were very keen to bring in early on. What's your view on it?
I suppose, if I was to be very honest, which I heard nothing about this until I was listening to Highland during the week, and I heard Dr. Seamus O'Kelly and yourself talk about this, and they brought it up. And I actually thought, and if Joe's listening to me now, he'll be mad with me, but I actually thought he got this wrong. But this is absolutely very worrying and very, very concerning. And I think the first thing that the minister and the government should do is publicly tell us what threat is there to the state. Because that's under the guise of what... Now, I've been trying to get some information in relation to it, and there's not a wild pile of information out there on it. So it's very hard to discuss it. But I think that the minister has to come out now and tell us what is the concern, what is the security concern that the government, the Dublin government, has that actually brought them to a point where they went, got a job, judge, were in camera, like you says, without knowing who she or he is, and actually brought this law in, where companies now will hold all our data. What business is it of you, me, or anybody else, what others do on a daily basis? Now, if you look back and using examples in terms of phone tapping that we've seen right through from the 80s right through to the guards, and in terms of how they monitor, I suppose, alternative groups out there, left-wing groups, how they are being used by the state, how this information will be used by the state under the guise of security. We've seen what happened in the during, I was reading The Guardian earlier on today, in terms of since the 70s right up until the noughts, in terms of the English police infiltrating, very much focused on left-wing groups. There were absolutely no threat to the state. Here we have a situation where we have, and there's a concern obviously out there, the appointment of Drew Harris, his past involvement with MI5, the concern that people would have that is he still working for MI5, those that he has brought in with him as his so-called team, do they still continue to work with MI5? Where will our information be going? We've had history with the HSC in terms of hackers. There's a huge amount of information out there that the people need to be given. And I, for one, would be very, very opposed. And they can dress it up all they want in terms of your man, what was his name, that murder case?
Dwyer.
Ian Dwyer.
Dwyer and that whole drawn out case, and that's something that I know myself personally that affected me.
Yeah, but his case wasn't a threat to the security of the state, so I don't see the relationship there. I just want to bring everyone in, and I'll come back to you if I have time, but just to quote Ms. McEntee, I made an application for an order having assessed the threat to the security of the state and have satisfied myself that there exists a serious and genuine present or foreseeable threat to the security of the state and that such a threat is likely to continue for at least 12 months. I had regard to the necessity and proportionality of the retention of everybody's data and took account of the impact on the fundamental rights of individuals as required. This threat is so severe that even by her own words there, you can suggest that she believes that it's more important than the privacy and data rights of the citizens of this state. Mary Hart, what's your view?
Well, I'm as much in the dark as everybody else, I think, on what the state threat may be. I did read back on it that, you know, I suppose the issue of Graham Dwyer, the state arm of the law did use the mobile phone information to run through the prosecution there, and then it was thrown out. So there's that issue that, that maybe that piece of information should be allowed to be used in court. We don't know how you can get around that. Bear in mind that mobile phone companies are obliged, and as are all internet companies anyway. That's what we call data centers. You know, they hold all the information anyway. It's just whether the government can get access to it or not. But this is how they could get Graham Dwyer the information, because they challenged and they got the information. So I think from my memory, if it serves me correctly, is that data is held for 5 years in a data center anyway. So when you make a phone call and you send a text, that goes somewhere and it stays there. But we've got to just believe that, you know, social media is a fierce arm now that we are well unaware of. 10-20 years ago, we did not foresee the threat that social media and those media platforms, that they can fake, set up a fake account and start pushing people, targeting them, as we've seen how it happened with Brexit, how it happened with Trump. You know, Facebook was used as a tool of the propaganda tool of the modern era. And people believe what they read on social media as being the truth and not a single
views on what the minister has done, Mary, though?
Can we come back to that as I just get a quick word from Leonard? Because even if you switch off all of your location data in Google, you turn off your privacy in Apple, this will allow the government, they've told they will be able to retain who you text, who you called, the context of those texts, where you were at any given specific time using location data off telecommunication towers, not you having your location data on the phone. So this gives them a very deep reach into the movements and communications of every person in this state for the reasons we don't know. Like, as I say, there's no reference to Dwyer in this. She says it's because the threat to this state is so real that it overrides people's rights to their data privacy. Leonard, what do you say?
Yeah, well, Joanne, as Mary said, and I'm sure Michael Coughlin knows too, we can't be that naive to think that our data has been stored and it's been collected and harvested by companies out there. But the only thing, like Greg, you were chatting about this yesterday, and listen to you, like me on a personal basis, I don't try to hide anything on social media or that there. That doesn't bother me. And in the case of Graham Dwyer and even the Oma bombing and that, I would have actually no issue with proper policing doing their job. Now, I'm not on about lazy policing, but just trying to figure out who was in the area today. Proper policing to actually bring people to justice for crimes is committed.
Yes, but the Dwyer case, the Dwyer case was not a threat to the security of the state.
Well, not
in the terminology she's using.
But as I'm saying, she needs to come out now. As you say, Greg, this sounded very serious yesterday when they came out. So they need to come out and give us something to say, well, what is the threat? They don't have to go into full details, but there has to be something that's happened in the last couple of weeks or a couple of months that has made her go to there. So she needs to come out and give us something like.
Michal Colum.
I just think that, which I'm very, very, very concerned about, it's just this movement, and we've seen it right across Europe and right across, I suppose, a lot of the Western world, where the governments are so much in control and looking to control society in terms of facial recognition, our movements, our food habits, our relationships, where kids are, our arguments with our peers, with our parents, with our partners, and this whole control. And it reflects very much, I suppose, if you look back right through from the 30s, 40s and 50s in terms of fascist states, you know, the rise of fascism right across Europe. Where, you know, we have fascist governments right now in Italy, and you have, and now we have an extremely right-wing government in Dublin who are now moving to take more control of our private everyday living.
Okay.
And I believe very much that is not their right to know what I do or what I do not do.
30 seconds to you, Mary.
Well, I don't blame the governments. I mean, the people that are threats to the state are those people that are manoeuvring social media to suit themselves and to suit their agendas. And those are the people we have to be scared of, not the people we elected, Michael. You're going to have to accept that when people
swear
votes, they are electing the people that they believe they can trust. And otherwise, you shouldn't be standing for election because you don't believe in the system.
Well, we'll have to agree to
adjourn. Obviously, I don't believe in the system because I'd love to see it overturned.
Come here, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one. Listen, it's been a really interesting conversation. Micheál Colum, thank you very much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Mary Hart, it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you very much. And Leonard, great to see and hear from you again. Thanks for your input as always. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
All right. Okay. And we'll be back with more on the 9 till noon show, including a whole host of your comments after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.